No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world. And today I have an iconic interview going down with someone that everybody knows, everybody loves. I might be setting it up a little bit, but Sean Kingston is
What's
in the
up,
building.
What's up,
brother? How you feeling, man?
I feel good, man.
Dude, you haven't done an interview in a long time, huh?
Yeah.
That's crazy because, like, you're mega famous, and I'm so used to, like, big artists just having a million fucking interviews, and yeah. It's always like, oh, God, like, I got to pick which one I want to watch before I do the interview or whatever, but when I searched up Sean Kingston interview on YouTube, it's kind of light, you know, you did Breakfast Club years ago, but
yeah.
I feel like, has that been an intentional decision that you prefer to stay a little mysterious?
Yeah, yep, stay exclusive, to be honest with you. I ain't been really like, I just been really focused on the album, recording music. I've been writing a lot of music behind the scenes for a lot of big artists.
Mm.
So, I mean, that's where most of my time, you know, running my label, Time is Money, and all that type of stuff. So, when it came to the interview side, I ain't really want to do much of it because I didn't feel like it was time. But now I'm about to drop my, you know, I'm dropping my album's done. We're starting to roll out single after single. So, I feel like, but I've been a fan of the show. I definitely.
Yeah, you tapped in a while ago. I was wondering if you were ever actually going to make this happen. I was fucking hyped that it actually is, dude.
I love Adam, man. You got a good personality, good energy. So it's a blessing to be right here, man.
I appreciate that, man. Yeah, when I was looking through your Instagram, I was definitely like, we haven't seen a ton of Sean Kingston in recent years. But at the same time, looking at your Instagram, I'm like, this dude is definitely not living the life of someone who hasn't put out an album in 8 years. The finances seem like they're just fine.
I mean, you know, for me, like I said, I basically choose to see. That's why I'm glad that I'm that's a good question. I basically choose to took a break. You know, I was in some bad contracts. See, a lot of this is a lot of times that people don't really hear this side. You know what I'm saying? Like, people just try to cover this side up. But in all reality, the downside of the music industry is, like, it's political, you know. And I had some bad deals that I had signed when I was younger. So I couldn't really put out. I could, but I wasn't happy in the situation that I was in. So I told my manager, which is Warren G, like, yo, I met him years and years ago, he was managing Tyga. I ran into him backstage at Rolling Loud, and I was like, yo, I want you to manage me. And he was like, yeah, for sure, man. Gave me his number, and this guy right here changed my life. Like,
really?
I guess you could tell him why, like, how the situation is. You got me out of all them bad deals.
Mm-hmm. How do you go about something like that with an artist as big as him? Like, the people who have him in bad deals probably don't want to let him out of them, right?
Yeah, what was interesting is, Adam, when I first started, like, Sean, I met Sean 10 years ago, so me and Sean...
Is there music playing somewhere?
I think... My bad, y'all.
Fucking boombox over here.
It's my phone.
Gotcha. All good.
All right, go ahead.
Now, the whole thing is, you know, I met Sean 10 years ago,
just as a young man
doing the music. So I was watching him. We weren't working together then. And, you know, I looked at him bigger than life with the music. But I never knew what was going on, you know, in the intricate part of his life. I just knew that there was this young cat who got a deal at 17 years old and took over the world with his music. So later on, we ended up bumping each other 10 years later at Rolling Loud. And Sean approached me and kind of talked to me a little bit about what was going on in his business. And I was amazed because when he'd asked me to work with him, I was like shocked because you look at this bigger than life talent, this bigger than life songwriter, artist, performer. He said, yo, you got to work with me. So we got together maybe about 3 weeks, 4 weeks after that, and I started kind of hearing a story about what was going on, and I realized that not only, like, how political the industry was, because I come from the industry, but he kind of opened up and said, yo, these are the kind of deals, these things are going on in my life, and I said, okay, we got to clean this up.
Wow.
And Sean gave me the opportunity to come in, because a lot of artists, you know, in hip-hop and pop, sometimes the ego, people don't really let you in, and then you got a lot of gatekeepers. But it was really easy to work with Mama Kingston and work with Sean Kingston. And I got in there and just started figuring it out.
The man, when I say Adam, the dude came in and just like, I think he's a secret magician because he came in and when I say he came in and clean shopped up, like the man came in the first 2 months, he got me out of my deal.
Uh-huh.
The first 2 months managing me, he got me out of my deal.
And you know,
third month, he brought me a $750,000 check for a hookah company from the Middle East.
Wow.
He just kept bringing different things to me. So the guys, you know what I'm saying, he's definitely, you know, we meet some managers, you know, they a lot of them talk a lot of stuff, but they can't really do. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, this guy's right here is all action, man. Like, he changed my life. So,
but one thing is too, Sean gave me the autonomy to come in with the right attorney. So I brought John Brank in and Simran Singh and Devin, and he let the attorneys come in and work with me. So when we got the legal side involved, we're able to just go to work. And, you know, I got a lot of great relationships because it's all business at the end of the day, right? Mm-hmm. And so you look at agreements that were signed in the past, and then you say, wait a minute, this is not too favorable for the talent, the artist, and you go in there and work it out. So Sean really gave me that that autonomy to do that, and I did that. So now he's free and clear from all those other obligations.
Free and clear, you feel me? Free got and clear. A new album, it's called Deliver, yeah.
But the right way.
The right way.
And control of all his masters, control of all his publishing, all his ownership.
Shout out to Empire. I just did a huge deal with Empire.
Like, really?
Huge.
I did not expect you to say that. That's crazy. Damn, because we have so many like smaller artists who come in here and tell us that they fucking love Empire, but that's big. Damn.
I mean, you know, I own my masters. I own my publishing. Mm. You know, Ghazi, that's the shout out to Ghazi. Shout out to Nima, man. Tina Davis, like, they're a team that let you be, you know, you have your creative control, but you also, you know, own your majority of your music. Mm. And I feel like that's the part of the business where a lot of artists should be coming in right now is the independent way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you might need more of a money for marketing, but I feel like when it's all said and done, you're going to own more of your music. So, and that's the best, that's the blessing side
of it. And one thing I got to say about Ghazi, Adam, Ghazi's such an entrepreneur, and Ghazi is a Bay legend, but he comes from the tech world. Mm. So he understands when artists talk about the major labels, well, who controls distribution today? The DSPs, right. Apple and Spotify and YouTube. So it's really a DSP game, right? Yep. So when you got the hits and you're a hit songwriter like Sean and you know how to put hits like that, what you need is just a little financial backing and then you go. But the good thing is now all his IP, all his publishing, all his masters, this man, time is money, own label, through Empire. So he gonna rock and he gonna be stopped now because now all you gotta do is continue to put out the hits and we go.
We're less used to hearing that version of it, as in like, I'm a huge artist, I have all this credibility, people know that I can make hits, but the labels basically, you know, have me wrapped up in deals that I don't want to be in. You don't hear that as much now because the artist has way more leverage in these situations. Mm-hmm. But like, you, when you sign, like, put us in your position, like, paint the picture of us where you were at when you did sign your deals initially. You probably felt like this was the only way that you were going to be able to get your career
off the ground, right? Yeah. So, you know, I didn't have too much, you know, I had knowledge, but not too much. You know, my mom was in prison. Mm. I was homeless. So I was just signing deals and, you know, they weren't terrible, but they weren't amazing deals. You know what I'm saying? So I've lived and I learned that, like I said, and God has got me out of those situations, bro. And Adam, now it's a blessing. I have fucking Chris Brown on my album, Little TJ on the new album, Favio. I have NBA Youngboy, Free Top, matter of fact. I got all these, like, the albums with Tusi. Everybody, Trippie Redd, like, everybody's on the project. And I feel like it's the Sean Kingston feel that the people miss, like the old school Sean Kingston with the reggae, the Jamaican, the island, the R&B, the, you know what I'm saying? But it's also a new edgy hip-hop-ness to it as well.
Right.
And I feel like yeah, man, when these music comes out, people are going to be blown away. I've been working on this project for a year and a half, 2 years, so.
Right. So. And I feel like a lot of artists like that who are super popular right now, you know, most artists don't get to like take 8 years away from putting an album out and still have the enthusiasm from a lot of the big artists right now. So that's dope to hear that they're fucking with you.
Yeah,
like that.
Man, it's a blessing. Like, when I tell you, like, quarantine for me has been nonstop busyness. Like, I think, for real, I think if quarantine didn't take place, I probably would have had, you know, a dope ass album, but it would have never had so much features because you gotta think about it. All the artists were at home. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
You know Trippie where to find
Redd,
them, yeah.
Lil TJ, you know, these are all my friends, but these guys don't gotta go to Rolling Loud. They ain't got no festivals because everything's shut down. They just gotta be in the house. So when I started playing people, you know, vibes and started sending them stuff to get on, it was like, it was the easiest thing. Sway Lee, shout out to him, he's on the album. Ozuna, which is a, you know, huge Spanish artist, he's on the album as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, bro, it's just a blessing, man.
But I think Adam, another thing that Sean's not mentioning, like, a lot of these artists who are fans of Sean and like friends of Sean, they came over to the studio in the house. the way this man writes a song, like nobody saw them in an element. All you hear is you see him on the videos, you hear him on the radio. It's different when you get in the studio with an artist that knows how to write a record and write a record for real. Like ain't no ghostwriter in the room, right?
So tell us about the early days of you even being interested in music and how you became creative and how you eventually built up this buzz that got you signed and you became a fucking household name like overnight.
So basically, I've been doing music since I was 7 years old.
Seven, wow.
Yeah, my grandfather is Jack Ruby. He was one of Bob Marley's producers in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
You can look him up. His name is Jack Ruby. So it's always been in my background and my family that music is, you know what I'm saying, reggae music is a huge part of, you know, how I was raised up. But what really took me to the top was when my mom got sentenced to 10 years in prison.
Right.
I kind of was on my own.
How old were you, 15?
I was 14.
Okay. And so, what did she get caught up for?
She got caught up for, she was basically doing, tax evasion, fraud, drug trafficking.
Uh-huh.
And I think that was it. That's not, yeah.
Wow. Okay. And so then what happens to you after that?
So I was by myself because I only been around my dad like 3 times, right? So I don't really have a crazy relationship with him. So when my mom left, it was like, I was on my own, you know? And it forced me to become a man early and to get on my job. And I always said to myself that when my mom get out of jail, like, I'm gonna be picking her up in her dream car. Like, I knew in my head that, 10 years is a long time for me to get this shit together. But I knew when she got out that I was going. So I started going crazy. I started hustling hard. I came to LA with $300 in my pocket.
Wow.
Yeah, that's that 300 like was only last like 2 days. You
know what what year are we talking that you
came
to LA?
We're talking 2006,
2005. Okay, so early MySpace era. Because a lot of people say that about you. Like, Sean Kingston came up in the MySpace era.
MySpace.
Right.
That's what I was getting into. So basically, 2006, I was just homeless, you know what I'm saying? Out here figuring it out, bouncing from my aunt Sharonda's house to some family members, friends that we knew, which is Leslie. He was a Haitian guy that was dating my mom back in the day. He lived out here in Burbank, so I was staying at his house between Aunt Sharonda and his spot. I was going back and forth out here. And I figured out how to work the internet because MySpace, I started blowing up on the charts. You know, I remember they used to have the indie charts.
Yeah.
So my song started, like, I think 2 songs started taking off on the indie chart or whatever like that. And I just started hitting up people, like, you know, sending my music to them. So I hit up Timbaland. I remember hitting up Lil Jon, Pharrell. I'm hustling. I'm sending like 400 messages a day, like copy and pasting messages, just being on the grind. And one day I get home and I open my inbox and I see J.R. Odom in my inbox. I'm like, what?
Hmm.
J.R. Odom? He's like, yeah, you know, we got your email. You're persistent. We love it. Send us some more music. So I sent them some more music and they were like, yo, we love your sound, but you know, we want to vibe with you, but we don't know if, you know, we don't have no budget right now to fly you from Miami to LA. I'm like, no, I'm in Burbank right now. And like, I'm in Burbank. It's perfect. Like, I'm here. And like, yo, let's go. So I linked up with them and the rest was history. Like,
wow.
The first day I got there, they started singing me. They started hearing me, melodies, me rapping, freestyling. And they said, yo, we want to sign you.
And that was your first time in a real studio?
First time in a real studio.
Wow. And were you just taken aback by how much better your shit sounded recording in there and everything?
It was just on from there. Like, I seen the professional. You got to think about it. That time, JR was, killing it. He had If I Was Your Best Friend for 50 Cent. He had SOS for Rihanna. He had Push It to the Limit by Rick Ross. He had all these big hits. So he basically was kind of like, I was kind of like his protege, just making, soaking up all the energy and just learning and taking it day by day.
Right. Who were you studying on a musical level? Because you seem like the kind of guy who was really like soaking up the game. And
facts.
Like, but it was life or death for you, right?
No, it definitely was. Because like I said, my mom was locked up. I was homeless. So it was either like, I was gonna get a job, which I was damn sure close to getting a job, but I just knew for a fact that my music would work. So I'm like, forget a job right now. Like, I gotta try going full speed at this, and I did, And that's why I try to, even when I'm doing interviews now, I try to make sure that I inspire the kids and let them know, like, no matter what you're going through, how you're going through it, like, you can make a way. You just gotta really just focus, get on your grind, and be tunnel vision. And then, like I tell people all the time, if you keep going at it, man, something positive gonna happen. Period.
Definitely. In terms of artists, who were you looking at that time?
Akon. Akon was a huge king to me, still is.
That makes sense.
T-Pain. It was so funny because a lot of people don't notice, Drake, this is crazy. Like, Drake was hitting up, because I was around Jazz Prince and a lot of the Rap-A-Lot people earlier. So I never, since you add him, I got to let you know, like, no, this is crazy right here. Nobody never knew this. Drake hit Jazz up back in the day, like, yo, I want to sign with Sean Kingston. And I'm just like, Drake, so I heard Replacement Girl, and I heard, I'm hearing all this early Drake. I'm like, this guy is a star, right? And then they came, they were like, oh, I think they said they wanted, like, he wanted like $200,000 and a Maybach and something like that. But I had just signed. You feel me? So I was like, damn, I don't know if I got $200,000 right now. But I want to sign this guy, like, and he ended up being Drake. But it's, that shit crazy. So it's like, that was a whole nother thing too. Like, to see all these people was just crazy. Hitting me up trying to, it was crazy, bro. Once Beautiful Girl started taking off, it was just like, it was over.
That paints the picture of where the world was at that time, because we've been in the Drake era for like 10 plus years. Mm-hmm. So like, the fact that you were just starting pre-Drake, just starting. That's pretty crazy.
Just
yeah.
starting, Beautiful Girls came out, yep, and it was just building up. And I have, like, it was crazy, bro.
But okay, were you going, when I think of you, I think of you as being somebody who seems like a real master songwriter. Was that your intention? Were you studying somebody like Akon, who was clearly making hits? Like, where was your mind at? And do you think you gravitated towards making those hits because you knew that that was going to be the shit that got you out of your financial situation?
Yep. I knew for a fact that I was coming with a new sound. And what I did, and that's why I tell people who's making music now, it's like, I can find a lot of talented people. There's so many talented people out there, but what's going to separate you from the rest is having your own sound. You know what I'm saying? Like, the first 10 seconds a song come on, somebody got to be able to identify, whether it's an ad-lib, whether it's a, you know what I'm saying? It's something that they got to be able to, you know, identify you. And once you got that sound created, I feel like everything's going to fall into place after that. So I was, you know, I was just studying the market, and I was just like, wow. Akon got T-Pain, the Convict Music. I'm like, man, I got to start my label. So I came up with Time Is Money. And
You started that even before you really got your career off the ground? Okay.
Yep. So the first artist I signed was Iaz. He had a couple hits out. Shawty's Like a Melody. That was my artist, Iaz. Okay. I wrote that song.
Wow, really?
Yep. He was signed to me. You can look it up right now. Iaz, IYAZ, right? That was number one in the world. Then I turned around and signed Tory Lanez.
Oh my God, I forgot about that too. Holy shit.
So I signed Tory Lanez, and it was just crazy, bro. Like, I was just living a life. I had two amazing artists. I was, you know, touring all the way, you know, with Justin Bieber, all that, and you know what I'm saying?
Who, like, you had a video with when he looked like he was yet to even begin puberty. He was so fucking young when that video with you is crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy, bro. Like, this dude was 15, 16 years old.
Right.
And I seen it right away. Damn. Seeing his YouTube, he probably had, what, 700 views, 800 views?
Right.
I DM'd him instantly, like, yo, I'm coming to Canada on a Bieber tour. I want to sign you.
And normally, dope artists are not always dope A&Rs. You know? Like, a lot of times, fact. Like, a big artist will, like, sign a bunch of artists, and they never
and they
go
never
anywhere.
Really go no effects.
You sound like you have a pretty crazy track record of just being able to spot shit early.
Yeah, think about it. Travis Scott, all these people, like... Like how Soulja was saying, like, I think Soulja Boy mentioned a couple times how a lot of people was on his couch. But if you really, really check the records, if they wasn't on Soulja Boy couch, they was on my couch. Like, a lot of artists came through me. I just was never, like, you know, the type of dude to be like, yo, you know, throw it in people's faces. I'm a humble dude. So when I do stuff for people, I do it out of my heart. I don't do it to get no clout, no recognition. I don't do it for none of that. But a lot of artists came through me, you know, Travis Scott, a lot of them.
When you first got in the studio with JR, how long was it before you landed on Beautiful Girls? Or was that something you already had?
No, I had Beautiful Girls probably like, I say a month and a half, 2 months in.
Okay.
We created that together.
Right.
I basically went to JR's studio one day, and on the way there, I took a cab. And the cab, they were playing Benny King's Stand By Me. And I was
one
like,
of my favorite songs ever, and I never realized it was the sample from Beautiful Girls until I was getting ready for this interview.
It was Benny King's Stand By Me. And I was like, in my head, while I was in the cab, I'm like, I wonder if anybody sampled this already. And then I started looking on YouTube, looking in Google. I'm like, wow, nobody sampled this? Well, we're going to do this today. So I pulled up to the studio, told JR, like, yo, JR, we got to flip this. He's like, let me hear it. I'm like, Benny King's Stand By Me. And that was it.
And you wrote all the lyrics and everything.
Yep.
Where were you at in your mind at that point? Was there any particular girl that was tormenting you in your brain?
Nah, I mean, of course I had some, you know, some puppy love and situations that was going on. But I just was really writing it off of, you know, like, I'm a type of person, like, I could kind of, like what everything that my mom was going through, everything that I see growing up, everything, like, I'm one of those type of people, like, I could put myself on, I could build storylines, you know what I'm saying? I'm good with stories. So with Beautiful Girl, it was just basically like a, you know, a concept idea, like, you know, it's like, damn, we want all the beautiful girls, but all the beautiful girls come with the most problems.
This is a story that I can definitely relate to, yes. A lot of the most beautiful girls I've ever met in my entire life are also like the most deranged, because they're just used to being able to get away with murder. Because
they're beautiful.
Because
so
guys won't check them.
Won't check them, yep.
And so you see it all the time, that they kind of end up like incapable of dealing with situations in life because they're used to fucking some guy just dashing
okay,
in and helping
cool,
them out.
It's cool, yep.
And we've all been part of the problem.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
For real.
For sure.
Definitely. For sure. So, okay, talk about your life changing there, though. Like, did your life not really begin to change until you landed on that song?
No, it changed a little bit before that, because when he signed me, he gave me $100,000.
Oh, okay.
So you got to think about it. $100,000 for, like,
must have felt like,
man,
$10 million.
I'm from the trenches. $100,000 to me was like $1 million.
Right.
Probably even more. So I was really excited. So I was living, comfortably, a little comfortably once he gave me that.
Right.
And then, like I told you, two months in, we came up with that song, and everybody in the studio knew that was a smash. You're like, yo, that's the first single.
Right, like out the gate. That's undeniable.
Undeniable.
You hear it one time, you know what it is.
You know what it is. Yep. Yeah. So it was like, okay, this is the first single. And we just took it from there.
And I mean, it's crazy because very rarely do you hear a song that is so big instantaneously that, like, literally every person that I said I'm interviewing Sean Kingston today either started singing that song, started fucking talking about how much that song meant to them when they first heard it. Like, it's really very, very rare that a song could have that big of an impact on that many people.
It's crazy, bro. Like, I still get messages today, like, you're my childhood nostalgia. I just want to cruise with top down with listening to all Sean Kingston. I'm like, I'm getting all these messages. I'm like, wow, you feel me? Like, from Take You There to Dirty Love with Nicki Minaj, all the hits, like Justin Bieber with Eenie Meenie with Justin Bieber, all those records, like, people remember growing up to them, and that was that was an amazing time in their life. So
yeah,
a lot of people be DM me a lot of, I'll be like, yeah, that's dope, you know.
Damn. So okay, the album comes out. And or was the single out before the album?
Single out was before the album.
And I mean, I just imagine the shit started changing very, very rapidly for you.
Man, I'm talking about 3 shows in one day. I'm like, what? 20,000 a show. I'm like, oof. Yo, you know what I'm saying?
You
I'm
get
doing.
It. You get
I start. You know, I knew I made it when I did a bar mitzvah with Bon Jovi. You know what I'm saying? I did a bar mitzvah. I swear, I did a bar mitzvah in Hampton, New York, with Bon Jovi, the whole group. I'm like, yo, this is crazy. I'm lit.
Right. Holy shit. That must have been pretty surreal given where you were at even just like a year or two before that, huh?
Facts.
Wow. Do you feel like, did you let the fame get to you? Did you like get out of control with it? Did you start indulging a little too much?
I'm not going to lie. You know, I lost my way because I was around people. You got to think about it. I had so much yes people around me. Mm. I had like, you know, I was chilling with the wrong people. Like, it's just a lot of stuff happened that, you know what I'm saying, that I made some, you know, bad decisions, you know what I mean? Like, I came out here, I started not drinking lean, but like basically, yeah, drinking lean.
It's awful lot of cops,
yeah. I try to make, awful lot of, you feel me? Just getting in the wrong stuff and the wrong crowd and kind of lost my way a little bit.
Mm.
Thank God I didn't go too deep in it, but it was kind of like a situation where it was just like, you know, I was just going through this depressed moment for a little bit because, like I said, those contracts started, you know, getting shittier, but and I'm just like, damn, I can't put out music.
Did
like
Bieber get you into lean, or did you get Bieber into lean?
Shit, I don't even know. I think he got. I don't even know how he got into it. Shit.
How was it sipping with him though? That must have been fun.
Man, that was legendary. That was legendary. That was legendary for sure. But I was just like, damn, Bieber, you messed up activists. Like,
right.
I love you.
So you're on board with that theory that he's the one who got it banned?
I think so.
Man. Oh my god, it's official now. You remember how much you were paying for a pint at the time?
$600, $500.
Dear God. $200 a line for walk now.
I look at them, nigga, I be like, what? Like, nigga, this shit, the best shit, which is activist, was $500, $600. I'm like, what's going on now?
Right.
I get too much EDD money, man.
That's crazy, though.
Changed the whole shit.
You guys were young as fuck and just living that young pop star life. Do you feel like you didn't have enough voices who are sort of leading you in the right direction and giving you the game and telling you to be careful and move slow?
Yeah, like how Juan G like came into my life. Nah, I just had people looking at me as a dollar sign and, you know, just try to milk the situation.
Damn.
I ain't never really had no father figure, so you got to think about it. Like, my mom gone and people just coming in and out of my life. It was just, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
So did you you actually ended up picking your mom up in her dream car?
Oh yeah, for sure.
How was that experience?
That was amazing. That was a red on. Her dream car was a red Continental GT with tan seats.
Right.
And I picked her up in a red Continental GT. She had the car for like two and a half years. I'm like, Mom, I'm gonna sell this car. You do not drive this shit. Like, she started collecting dust in the garage. I'm like, all right, cool.
She's not a driver.
She go to the beach here and there and little stuff, but she wasn't really whipping that shit. Like,
right. You know? So, were you having to like explain to your mom over the phone what was happening in your life? She must have been pretty astounded.
She was, but she was also worrying about her commissary too. like all that shit sound good, but you know, I need some money on my books. I'm like, Mom, don't worry. Like, I'm really actually, you know, becoming a big artist.
Right.
She's like, we'll see. Not on like, you know, but like just. You know, not she believed in me, but for sure she believed in me. She was just like, everything just sounded surreal at the moment.
Yeah.
Then she started seeing like, oh wow, like he's on Jimmy Kimmel, he's right. on Today Show, like you know what I'm saying?
Because there must have been a point where it spilled over, and all of a sudden she's just seeing you on TV, oh, and it's yeah. like, oh okay, he's not just saying this. Oh, this is real.
They
yeah.
Started, man, they started treating her like Beyonce in jail. They was running behind her. She was getting free meals, extra stuff. She was getting all type. It was like her bringing scarves, all type of shit. It was just they was flooding her.
Wow, that's amazing. So okay. You would characterize the next few years of your life as just being on tour and just basically living this life, or how did the next couple of years play out of your life?
It was just touring, and you know, like I was, you wouldn't believe it, Adam. Like for a dude, like before Corona, I missed out on $2.1 million worth of shows with no new music out.
Why is that?
Because I guess not. Just the pandemic.
Why did you miss out? Oh, before.
No, right before the pandemic came, I had $2.1 million booked. Worth of shows booked already.
So you are already ready to do a big return to the to the live scene. Yep. Okay.
And then the pandemic came, and I was like, shit.
But Adam, he tours like that consistently every year without, like the music is so infectious that like even if he didn't put out a record, he would still tour for $7-8 million a year.
Mm. Yeah, because I mean, when you have a catalog like the one that you have, I mean, there's all kinds of different, you know, there's radio festivals, there's sort of like overall music festivals. Facts. Like you could fit into a million different, like you could probably be on a big Rolling Loud spot.
Man, I was
you know?
Doing so much. Adam, you wouldn't even believe it, bro. Like I had so much that we had to start sending deposits back. I'm like, crazy. Damn, this Corona shit really, you know what I'm saying? And then boom, God bless me, started, you know, opening this guy doors to let Juan G come in and, you know, bring shit back to life.
That's teamwork, though. But that's what happens when you have a great partner. Like, the partnership is clear because I don't tell Sean what to do. Right. Sean's his own boss, his own man. I give him advice, and then we look at that advice and say, okay, what do we think about that advice? So
Shout out to Caesar, too,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, Caesar, what's up, bro?
Caesar, you got to come in the camera a little bit, man. You got to. This dude right here is the dude that records all my music.
Oh, okay.
He's the engineer. He's the producer. He's this guy right here is a legend. You know what I'm saying?
Got to keep a good engineer.
I found
him.
Yeah, when I say this guy's a genius, like, I found him through a mutual friend, and ever since then, we've been glued together. Like, if he ain't in the session, I ain't recording.
Mm.
Like, it's literally just like that. So I want to thank him because let the world know this guy right here is an amazing engineer, and all the music you're about to hear, everything is mixed and mastered, all that shit by Caesar. So
crazy. Well, shout out to Caesar. Hey, so, okay, early on, though, you're talking about how you were partying and everything. Did you lose your way in a sense? Like, did you stop kind of having that enthusiasm for recording and everything?
For sure. I was depressed, Adam. Mm. I just told you. I was like... Real. I was going through it, man. I didn't want to, cause you got to think about it. I'm in the house and I'm looking at people saying I fell off, but I'm like, how the hell I fell off when I'm writing hits for your favorite artist and I'm living in a $6 million house? But it's just they, you know, out of sight, out of mind. They're not seeing me. They not know what I'm doing, and it kind of gets to you after a while. You know, you reading all this shit like, damn. Then you know, lawsuits coming in play, jury lawsuits, and this that. You like, what the hell, man? You like, damn. And then, like I said, I went through all those trials and tribulations to make me a better person who I am today. You know, I felt like I went through what I went through for a special reason, you know?
Mm.
Now I got a testimony. I could inspire new artists and show them the way and let them know you don't got to get all that jewelry.
Yeah.
You don't got to get all that. Invest in some property.
Buy
some real estate.
You said with a fucking brick on your finger right there.
Oh, yeah, but these shit's from six, like 5 years ago. Boy, I ain't been buying none. I've been investing. This guy right here got 80 buildings. I got six, you know, with this dude. That's what I'm trying to tell you. Like, he the type of dude to come in, he don't even let, he like the typical managers is going, okay, you focus on music, I'm gonna get percentage off your shows.
Mm-hmm.
We go, you feel me? I'm gonna get, and cool. No, this guy's like, yo, Sean, aside from music, I want you to set yourself up. You've been through too much. You've been doing too much splurging. You don't see where that got you. You don't see where I need you to invest. Mm. And I need you to go. I'm like, all right, Juan, let's do it.
But there's so many other strategic partnerships out there where people want to work with Sean. Mm-hmm. It's not hard.
These days, if you're a big musician, there's a million different ways that you can capitalize on that.
My work is easy, to be really honest with you. He makes it easy for me.
Yeah, so him and his partner, Hunter, you know, shout out to Hunter, they got a crazy situation going on. And the guy basically just is like, yo, Sean, I want you to go little by little, but I want you to, you know, and I started doing that. I started doing Airbnb properties and moved on to lease to you know.
Long-term wealth. Sean has to focus today on long-term wealth, which that's what you're doing. And I think that that's the bigger part for his fans and the young people that look up to him. Mm. Yeah, the music is great. That's the foundation. The hits are the foundation. The touring is the foundation. What is he going to do? What is he doing 20 years from today, right? Mm. Where is Sean Kingston 20 years from today? And that's a wealthy real estate mogul.
And being a pop star and like being constantly present at every awards show and being on everybody's records and stuff like that, and then just making a lot of money and being happy, these are two very different things that don't overlap, right?
Facts. They don't.
Because if you want to like had chosen to keep putting yourself out there constantly year after year, you know, it's like people are going to have the perception, oh, Sean's doing great. I see him everywhere, yada, yada. But then meanwhile, that might not be great for your mental health, and it might not be great for what you want to be doing with your time. You know, like when you talk about being in the studio writing for people, well, you could get a big chunk of the money off of that record right there and not ever have to tour. It's a very, very different experience, right?
Yep. Mm. And that's what it was with me. You know, I was writing a lot of stuff for Chris Brown. I did the Mosey record, you know, with him, French Montana, the Migos. I helped out the AO record with Tyga. Like, you know, I was definitely there for Chris Brown, you know, behind the scenes writing a lot of stuff. And for a lot of other artists as well, you know, and I felt like this is where it really, 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 really came to the point where it's just like, I want to come back out. Like, I want my fans to hear the new Sean Kingston, the older Sean Kingston, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's time again. And I feel like, you know, nothing beats itself. Like, right now, we got a lot of stuff planned, and I'm excited.
Because there must have been a time where you kind of felt a little overexposed and where being super famous didn't feel as fun, and then all of a sudden being a little bit more anonymous and just being in the studio made you happy. But then once you've had enough of that, you start to feel like, damn, like I kind of miss having that relationship with the fans and really being on stage. Well, I guess you're on stage all the time regardless, but, you know, putting yourself out there and saying what you want to say on records and all that is something that maybe you've wanted to taste again at a certain point.
Facts, yeah. Mm. And I wanted to go out there and do it. And I feel like, you know, I got him by my side. Shout out to 1G444 Management, Bethany. I got Empire, like I said. Shout out to Ghazi, Nima, and Tina Davis. Happy, the A&R, which I got a beautiful A&R. His name is Happy. The dude is dope. So it's like we got a whole team. And I feel like, you know, that's together everybody achieve more. And that's what we on right now, so.
And I really feel like Adam, earlier in his career, he was doing all the lifting.
Right.
So when you're carrying the entire team, you get tired as a player. Mm. You feel me? So we've made a decision as a team to let him be the star and the owner, but let's support him and let's carry him, because he was carrying everyone, right? Spending millions of dollars helping everybody out, giving a lot of people jobs that wasn't sometimes doing what they were supposed to be doing. Mm. So it's about I think it's getting fun for Sean now, because now he's able to look at his organizational chart and look at his team, and he could pick up the phone at any given time. This is what we're doing for you. Do you approve it? This is what you're going to do. Do you approve it? And I think that is what's giving you this clarity, Sean, today, to be even greater than you were back then. I actually don't believe his career started yet. Mm. I think the world is yet to see what's going to happen with Sean Kingston.
Right.
I think this chapter is everything else he was just doing was just laying the foundation. Now he's building the building.
That's interesting, because I mean, when you look at a lot of people like, who, you know, a Michael Jackson, a Prince, it's like, you know, when they were your age, they were just getting started in a lot of ways. You know, you're not like you just experienced a bunch of success early on, and that's definitely the right attitude to have.
Yep, and I'm excited, man. Like I said, I'm a godly person, you know, and you know, I definitely understood what it takes to, you know what I'm saying, understood what it takes to get back, and mm-hmm. I feel like that's just hard work, determination, and hunger. You know, I'm in the studio till 8 o'clock in the morning every night, like just coming up with different concepts, different melodies, ideas. It's like just hungry for this again, you know?
That time in the studio, is that when you feel like you're the most happy? Because if you're gonna stay up to 8 a.m, I would assume. But you know, how much does that mean to you?
Yo, when I tell you, I love the studio. I love it. Like I could just live in there all day.
Really? And do you prefer to be in there alone working on your stuff, or you prefer to be in there with a bunch of people?
No,
or?
I don't like a crowd of people.
Really? That's a little too distracting for you to focus on it?
I like to just be vibing, just me, the engineer, maybe one person.
So even when you're making stuff for other people, you'd prefer to just sort of make reference tracks and then show them to people rather than recording right in front of them?
No, or if they're there, like, you know, Chris or whatever, I try not to make it too crowded,
right,
just so I can really go on and focus and, you know what I mean, get in my element.
Mm-hmm. When you mentioned these jewelry lawsuits that you're dealing with and stuff, at a certain point, did you really just start to feel like you were a fucking punching bag for the media? And was that stressful? And did that take a lot of the fun out of being a pop star?
Sure, it did, you know? And, you know, like a lot of people, you know, with the media, it just sucks because the fans believe what they read.
Mm.
You know, a headline could come out and that shit don't really mean nothing. You know what I'm saying? But they just, TMZ are worded a certain way and, you know, headline it a certain way so they can get traffic.
Mm-hmm.
It's all clickbait, right? So TMZ will put an article out, and it's like, damn, by the time you're just looking at that, you're like, oh, whoa, Sean Kingston did what? And then you'll read into it, and it'll be like, oh, he just got, and it's just like, it just like you said, I felt like I was a punching bag, man. I just felt like it was like, damn, like, I can't catch a break. And I'm like such a great, you know, humble person.
Mm.
But like I said, I had people around me that was making wrong decisions and being a yes man and not really, like I said, just moving fast. And I felt like, but guess what, though? You know what? I'm all cleared up. You know what I'm saying? I don't owe nobody no jewelry, none. I'm good. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I did a $4.2 million deal with Empire. You know what I mean? And I'm blessed.
Another thing too, when we talk about like,
and as soon as I got that, I started clearing up all this because I ain't want no karma. I believe in karma. And I believe in doing. You feel me? So I made sure the first thing I did was just clear up a lot of the stuff that I needed to. You know?
And when you looked at that stuff, it was like, a lot of jewelers, you know how they finesse. They try to finesse the artists a lot. Mm-hmm. You feel me? And that's the stories that nobody talks about.
Nobody talks about that. Nobody talks about why. Yeah, I stopped paying for the jewelry because I was buying $300,000 worth of stuff, and I come to realize a majority of the shit is Moissanite. You know what I'm saying?
Or
CVD lab diamonds. It wasn't even like a lot of, you know what I'm saying? And you being young, you just buying shit. You're not even really, of course, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's why I try to talk to the younger generation now. Like, don't look at the bling. Cause when you go into jewelry shops, they got all type of lights that's gonna make that motherfucker hit crazy. You're gonna be like, oh, I got a crazy piece. By the time you bring that shit home, you're like, what is this? Is this the same shit? Like, motherfuckers don't. So you gotta really just get involved in your diamonds, you know, F color, G color, VVS, SIs, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you got to know, you know what I mean? Like, what you getting.
Did you ever have that moment where you're in the studio and you got all your jewelry on and you feel like you're the flyest motherfucker on earth, and then you got somebody who's a little deeper in the game and they sort of were like, hey, I don't know about that. It's not, might not be what you think it is.
Facts. Ooh. I definitely.
Anybody in particular? Tell us who told you.
I wouldn't be able to say one off the top, but I definitely been in the room with, you know, some celebrities over here like, yo, Sean, like, that's a hard ass tennis chain, but you know, it might got some SI stones in there. And I'm like, what? I pay $65 for this. But then, you know, you do your investigation and it is SI. You know what I'm saying? Because it's just like you buy shit just, you know? So I kind of got fed up with a lot of jewelers. Not a lot, just the three main jewelers that I was messing with. Because out of the three, only one of them that was only doing right. And that's why I stick with him till today, and that's Peter Marco.
Okay.
He do all my stuff. Shout out to Peter Marco. He do all my stuff now. Because I feel comfortable with him. Like, I know what I'm getting. Every time I buy something, you get your certification right there. It says everything on there. It's basically like a contract. So, you know, he can get his ass sued if everything on there is, you know what I'm saying? So I kind of just deal with him when I'm getting stuff. But like I said, I haven't bought no stuff in like, I'll say 2-3 years.
Right. Do you feel like, did you ever make financial decisions that really put your financial situation in jeopardy at a certain point? Because a lot of people, you know, they come in the game, they get the big advance, and they just fucking run through it so fast. Did you ever have like real money issues like that, or was it? Because I feel like you probably brought in so much money throughout the career that you could afford to make a lot of bad decisions.
Yeah, it was not. It definitely was never. When I was on TMZ, but I was in an $8 million house, or you know what I'm saying? It was whatever. It was never that.
Right. Definitely. So do we fast forward a little bit to the jet ski incident? Because I feel like that was like another just like massive moment where everybody just kind of stopped and you were just like 100% what everybody was talking about all of a sudden.
Yeah, crash. I basically was, you know, I had a house on Star Island. So I basically, you know, I always used to ride my jet ski like around 2-3 o'clock. But this day, it was a Saturday, I'll never forget. And I wanted to go a little, you know, on the other side of the water. So I was going 75 miles per hour. And as I got close, you know, jet ski doesn't have any brakes. So as I got close, I tried to slow down because I knew I couldn't make it under because the tide got high. Mm. It looked like I could have made, like I could have went under. But as I got close to it, I started noticing that the tide, you know, it was rising up. So I started going 75 miles per hour like that guy. And then I hit the bridge. You know, I hit a bridge and I tore my aorta, which is the tube that connects to your heart.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
And so, okay, how did you get rescued at that point? Or like
they skylift me.
They had to. Wow. And so how long were you out there before they realized you were out there, though?
I was out there for like 10 minutes. Like 10 to 15 minutes.
And is your life pretty much flashing before your eyes?
Yeah, my lungs was crushed. Blood coming out of everywhere. Spitting up blood. All type of stuff.
Holy shit. How long was it before you... So I mean, you must have been out
it
for...
Was a, yeah, I was out for like an hour and a half. Probably like an hour. But the blessings of when I got knocked out, unconscious, I was just floating. An ex-Coast Guard who just happened to be, it was a miracle. You know, this guy was an ex-Coast Guard, but just happened to be going the wrong way. And he was about to make a U-turn. And as he's making a U-turn, he sees, you know, people, you know, calling for help. That was in the area where, you know what I'm saying? Because they knew they seen me face down. They seen all the blood. They seen everything. So he jumped in and brought me up, tried to do CPR. And, you know, shit like that was coming around. All up, you know, blood kept coming up. And they skylifted me. That's when, you know, the helicopter came. They brought me to Jackson Memorial Hospital. And, you know, God took it from there.
It really occurs to me that, like, we're very lucky to even be having this conversation with you right now. I'm kind of, in my mind, I'm, like, picturing the other version of this where it's like, damn, Sean Kingston's almost been gone for 10 years. I mean, that must have, once you were done healing and stuff, did that kind of give you a different lease on life? Like, realize how close you came to losing it all?
Yeah, facts. It made me thankful. It made me just, you know, like now it's just like I'm very more cautious, you know.
Mm.
When I'm doing something, I'm not rushing and doing it. Like I'm really, you know, seeing if this is what I want to do.
Right.
And yeah, pretty much.
How long were you in the hospital before you started to get to a point where you could have a somewhat normal day?
I was in critical
day?
Condition for like 2 months. I see you.
Wow. And how long did it take before you could sort of like live a full day without having to necessarily have this be a huge part of your day?
Like a couple months.
Right.
3 months. I started doing, you know, all the guys, the therapy people started coming over, and I started doing therapy and, you know, getting my body right, getting my hands, like making sure all the, you know, because a lot of, all my left side, all this was crushed right here. So I had to learn how to, you know, get everything back moving again.
Holy fuck. That's insane. I can't believe you made it through that. That's pretty, pretty
God
amazing.
It's a blessing. It's crazy.
Definitely. Wow. That's incredible. Talk about your relationship with Soulja Boy. You're talking about how people were sleeping on you guys' couches and stuff. Are you guys still close? Like, how do you feel about
it? Yeah, for sure, man. That's one of my closest friends. Like, we talk every other day. We might not talk daily, but the week ain't gonna pass if I don't hear from him. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's my boy, man. You gotta think about it. We both came out 2007.
Yeah.
You know, the summertime. You know, I came out July. I think he came out like a month before me. Or I was a month before him, but we basically was always buddy because we were, you know, same time, same era, you know?
Yeah.
So all the shows used to be me and Soulja. A lot of the tours was me and Soulja.
Right.
So
he's somebody else who was kind of had a, and kind of became like a media punching bag at a certain point where they basically just decided that they wanted to, you know, give him a hard time every day on the internet. And I mean, he kind of played into it, that Breakfast Club interview. Like when you were watching that, what was going through your head?
Man, I was just like, yo, this guy is crazy, man.
But is he
Dre
crazy?
Tiger? I'm like, yo, this dude is ridiculous.
Is he crazy or is he a marketing genius?
He's both. Mm. He's both. He's crazy, but he's a marketing genius at the same time.
Right.
Only reason why I say he's crazy because Soulja gonna act on whatever. If he feeling it right then, he gonna let you know.
Right.
He ain't gonna be like, all right, man, this is Adam 22. I gotta be politically correct. He's gonna come on this shit and say, man, this nigga over there, man. I got a hundred shots, man. Nigga, pull up, nigga, it's up. Like Soulja, come on, let's try to defuse the issue. Like, let's not go straight. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I love that dude though. That's my boy, man.
Yeah, I mean, he did a No Jumper interview like maybe like 6 months before he did that Breakfast Club interview, and he gave me like a pretty like stable.
I see he fell
normal.
Asleep on you, man.
Did he fall asleep?
I think it was an interview. He was like, he was falling asleep and you caught him. I think, yeah.
I can't remember. Yeah, definitely could have happened. But I mean, I feel like that he gave us a pretty like normal interview, and then he went into Breakfast Club, and I was like, oh, this is the marketing genius version of him that went in there with a bunch of like wild ass shit sort of in his mind that he was going to say to capture everybody's attention, which he's just like, when he wants to, he's so good at making everybody obsessively pay attention to what he has going on. But we've seen like a very different version over the past few years where he's not doing interviews. He's doing his Twitch shit. And he has a hit right now. Mm-hmm. But I mean, he just seems like he kind of maybe had some of the same realization that you had, which is that, you know, maybe I'll enjoy my life a little bit more if I'm a little bit more low-key and not always putting myself out there in the media.
I just always tell him that. I said, like, Soulja, not everything you got to put out there. Like, you want to have a private life. I understand that you came up off YouTube and your version of it is vlogging and really getting close to your fans and really bringing them in. But it was a lot of stuff that didn't need to be said, you know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of beefs and a lot of stuff like that. But, you know, everybody was young. You got to think about it, man. You give $1 million, you give, you know, $8-9 million to a kid that's, you know, 16, I mean, come on, bro. Like, what? I mean, you know, it's all come with a lot of shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, people don't think about that side of it. People just look like, oh, this nigga's an asshole. He's this, that. But it's just like, man, you got to think about it, bro. Like, we're still young, but we're young with a lot of money.
And people think your life is supposed to be easier because you have a lot of money.
Because you have a lot of money. That's the opposite. Like, it's the opposite. So it's like, you know, you're going through mad different shit. You got people calling you like, yo, can I borrow $300? I used to change your diapers. And I'm like, she used to change my diapers. I don't remember you shit.
Yeah. By nature of me being a baby at that time, I do not remember.
Yeah, I do not remember, but okay, cool. Like, it's just, you know, funny. You're dealing with all type of stuff, so.
Holy fuck. Okay, I hate to do it, but I got to hit you with the iconic quote. I introduced you to Sean Kingston. Does that trigger a little bit of PTSD right there when you hear that? The Soulja quote when he was saying that to Quavo.
The Quavo, is it?
I mean, that was like, that was just such a viral thing for him to say, like in that moment. Like having this whole conversation with you, I can see why that actually was a very relevant thing for him to say at that time. But I think to a lot of people, it was like, why the fuck is he bragging about introducing him to Sean Kingston? This is a strange thing for him to say in this moment.
Shout out to Migos, man. He definitely did introduce me to them boys, though.
Mm.
I introduced him to Travis Scott. I introduced Soulja to Travis Scott because Travis Scott was basically, you know, staying with me at my house. And I basically, you know, believed in Travis from like when he was a producer with Kanye. He didn't even have no music out like that. It was still early, you know?
Wow.
And him and his manager, David, was always, you know, at my spot. So I introduced and Soulja used to come over there to record. So one day he brought Migos over.
Because he was having all the big artists around that time. He had Famous Dex around. Yep. He had Migos around. Soulja was like one of these A&R type dudes that if he had been signing artists right back then.
Oh, my God. He would have the biggest label ever.
He would be on top of the fucking world, bro.
Yeah, facts. Like, it was crazy, you know? So he was bringing Migos over, and I had Travis Scott at the crib. And when they both linked up, everybody was vibing, and that's when they made Sloppy Toppy, the Migos and Travis. So a lot of people don't even know how Sloppy Toppy was made, but that's how it was made. It was made because Soulja brought Migos over, and I had Travis already over there. So we basically let them introduce, you know what I'm saying? And they did their thing, and yeah.
Mm. Were there any girls around? Was there any actual Sloppy Toppy happening? Sorry if that's TMI.
No, I don't think it was sloppy.
Just going off memories. Yeah, okay. The night before. I feel you. Okay, so you said shout out to Migos. I assume that you've at some point squashed the beef with them or put all that situation to bed?
Yeah, that shit been over with, man. Like okay. I say, a lot of stuff, niggas was just really acting out on just being young, man, and not really understanding. Like, nigga, like, you feel me? Just a lot of stuff you got to kind of just, analyze it and be like, you know, does this really need my energy? Does this kind of, you know?
Mm.
So a lot of the stuff we was doing, we was just really young, you know? Migos ended up, you know, having a phone conversation with me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been squashed, you know?
Okay.
And I respect everything they been got going on and, you know what I'm saying, still do.
That's
you know?
Dope.
They worked ethic. They always, you know, they all good guys, especially, you know, Offset and Takeoff. Those was like my, you know, my brothers, like, we used to talk every day, so ain't nothing but, you know, like I said, once you get older, You focusing on the money. You focusing on getting it right. You know, bringing back feel good music. Letting my fans, like, all that beef stuff and that negative vibes. We passed that. Mm. We didn't even really, you know.
Yeah, because I mean, when you even think about that era and time of Soulja and Migos beefing and you being sort of wrapped up in stuff. When you think about like where Migos are at right now, it's kind of hard to imagine them being involved in some shit like that now. It just kind of seems sort of childish in comparison to grown ass men trying to make money out this shit. You know?
Yep.
Yeah. Facts. Okay, there was a thing about you starting a boxing league. Is that still a possibility?
Some investors was trying to do it with me. Mm. And we were trying to get it done, but some licenses issue came in bar, so.
Okay.
But yeah, because YK Osiris was trying to.
He was trying to fight everybody.
He was boxing little TJ.
Right.
That was at my house.
Oh, right, yeah.
The house that I'm at now, the house that I bought in the Valley. And when they was about to do it on the basketball court, when it was about to fight, I'm like, yo. Maybe I got it's too much celebrity trying to box, but ain't nothing really set up. Like, right. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, I want to be the first one to, you know, just me having my business mind. And so we spoke to some investors and we were trying to put it together, but it never really came out the way we wanted it to. So we like, yeah.
It's too bad because when you look at like what's going on with these YouTuber boxing matches and the TikTokers and everything, I always think back. I was just talking about Vlad about this with Vlad the other day, that if that Soulja Boy and Chris Brown fight had actually happened, I think that would have been the entry point of all these rappers realizing, like, oh, I can make millions off of doing a boxing match. That's crazy. The problem, I think, is that these YouTubers have like less to lose. And in hip hop, if you get your ass beat, it's kind of hard to imagine the career necessarily being as strong after that. There's so much ego involved, you know?
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know. Were you ever thinking of actually boxing somebody, or you just wanted to be the Don King of the situation?
The Don King.
Yeah.
I ain't getting all sweaty and shit. I'll take the check from it, though.
Yeah. But you are a big ass dude, bro. When the last time you beat somebody's ass?
Oh, yeah, I ain't gonna lie to you, man. Listen, one thing about it for sure, my hands work. You feel me?
Like, they work.
I'm from, you gotta think about it, I'm from Kingston. Mm. Like, you know, like, and people forget that. Like, I literally was raised in Kingston, Jamaica, so. There's a lot of stuff going on. I done seen dudes' heads get chopped over a parking space. I done seen all type of stuff.
Like, chopped?
Yes.
Like off?
Like hanging, like yeah, basically almost off.
Holy fuck.
It's all type of stuff.
How often you go back?
I got a house there.
Okay.
I go back. Last time I went was right before Corona. So it's been like a year and some change. But I'm always there.
You must be like a fucking god out there. How's that?
Hey, I'm the ambassador.
Yeah.
I'm one of the ambassadors.
Right, because it's like, I mean... Who's the other like massive stars?
Usain Bolt.
Okay, yes, but musically, like I mean,
me, Sean Paul. I mean, of course, you got the Legend Vibes Cartel and some of the ones that's
Damian Marley.
Mm. And, you know, that's really growing in. But then, like the international scene, I would say Sean Paul, Sean Kingston, Coffee right now.
Yeah, damn, that's. I mean, they go hard for their people though, huh?
Facts.
Like that, you feel damn, just man, that
jump
vibe.
Big up.
They're super proud of you when you're out there and stuff. That must be a crazy feeling.
Yes, sir, ski.
I watched a fucking documentary about Bob Marley, and I mean, you know, a lot of us, like whitewashed fucking people, we just listen to music and we're like, the music's great. His career was a fucking war. Like, the story of his career is insane.
I told you about that documentary. That documentary is legendary. It should win an award, bro. It's crazy.
The craziest shit about it is I never knew that like political parties would necessarily be like completely wrapped in with gangs. Like that element of it was kind of mind blowing for me.
That assassination scene where they showed like how he was gonna try to assassinate him while he was in the studio.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Madness. Rest in peace. Okay, so this album though, I saw you have G Herbo on the first single, is that accurate?
Yeah.
That's big.
Yeah. Definitely. It's called Darkest Times.
Uh-huh.
And it's coming. You know what I mean? Like I'm definitely like we damn near like real close from it. So I'm excited. Then like I said, I got a lot of people on the album. The album is called Deliverance. Darkest Times is really like we just warming them up. That's just like a setup record.
Right.
You know what I mean? I won't even really call it my first single. It is because it's the first one coming, but we just laying the tracks with that one. But the song is out of here though.
Definitely.
Like it's a smash, though. So.
What would you say that you were inspired by in terms of like newer shit that's out, or just like what sort of made you want
to
go?
I listen to everything, bro. You'd be surprised. Like I listen to everything, like from Nardo Wick to the new Nardo Wick to Brent Fayez to Giveon to shit, Lauryn Hill, sometimes taking it back, Miseducation days. I listen to everything, bro.
Mm.
Everything.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, It's exciting. I mean, does it feel like an exciting time in your life? Like,
man,
you're very
excited,
ready to be
Adam,
back
I'm ready.
And do this?
Let's do this, man. I can't wait. I'm excited. The fans, y'all get ready. Deliverance is coming, man. First single, Darkest Times. After that, we coming with another one 3 weeks. So get ready. The ride is here. We off to the races.
Definitely. Well, I'm excited. I mean, it's good to see you just in such a positive place and ready to do it. It's kind of a little depressing when you look at the Sean Kingston's Spotify and you're like, damn, this dude ain't dropped a project in mad long. Like, I mean,
and I got 13 million monthly listeners. That's crazy.
That is crazy.
13 million monthly listeners, and I ain't put out no music in 4 or 5 years. Like, that's crazy.
Wow.
So get ready. We on the way.
That is crazy. I mean, yeah, that's got to be a wild feeling to really feel like you could
man,
take
Adam,
that much time off and
I
have that strong of a
you,
connection.
I got to ask you, man, where are the girls at? Man, you be having a lot of girls around you, man.
Mostly they're controlled by my girlfriend.
Okay.
I kind of leave a lot of that up
like,
to
this
her.
Dude, this dude's like a real pimp, man. Like, I be seeing all type of girls around Adam. Like, I know he got his relationship, but his girls definitely bring other girls around. I'm just like,
you must have
the best situation ever. Like,
let me tell you, Sean, if the music thing don't work out, there's a lot of money on OnlyFans.
Yep.
So, you know, if you're trying to get in the game, I think it could be very profitable for you. I don't know. It's just gonna throw it out there. Yeah, but, you know, she holds it down, man. It's a fucked up new world we're in where, you know, a OnlyFans girl is kind of beating the fuck out of, you know, like when I think about like the dating scene pre-OnlyFans, mm-hmm. where it was like even the most successful like model or whatever was not really touching the rapper financially. Now these girls are in their house with their iPhone and they're making so much money
they're more money than rappers. Kind
a of lot of them, yeah.
Wow.
Wild time we live in.
Wow.
Crazy. You got to find yourself an OnlyFans girl. You single?
I'm single, man. Single.
Single and planning on staying single?
I got a couple vibes. You know what I'm saying? I got a couple vibes. You know, I'm a silent sniper, so you had a couple vibes, but I'm definitely single. I'm on the music vibe right now.
That's a smart guy keeping it close to his chest. Respect. I appreciate you guys coming through for sure.
Thank you guys, man. The legend Adam. You know, shout out No Jumper. I'm a huge fan of the show.
Appreciate that.
It's a blessing. We here.
Thank you so much.
My brother.
My guy. Appreciate
you. Thank you, bro.
Sean Kingston, No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world. Check us out on YouTube, SoundCloud, iTunes. Like, comment, and subscribe. NoJumper.com if you want to support. And we will check out your music live on stream Friday. Appreciate you, man. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir.